This week on the Drag Zine Podcast, we welcome back Mike Gallini to talk about the NMRA season, NMRA Finals, Ford Intergalactic Fest, Heads Up Racing, and a whole lot more. So, pull those belts tight. Get ready to put into the beams. The Drag Zine Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Drag Zine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. Brought back Mike Gallini this week for the show to talk about the NMRA and everything going on this weekend. It's a really interesting conversation to hear kind of how tight that season's been and what's going to be happening at Beach Bend Raceway this weekend. So even if you're not a Ford fan, it's going to be an awesome show. And if you are a Ford fan, well, this might be heaven for you. So without further ado, let's get this party started. All right, my guest this week on the Drag Zine Podcast is Mike Gallini, my first two-time guest. It's like being a 16-time world champion in the WWF, except much cooler, and we're here to talk about drag racing, so that's even better. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Brian. How are you, man?
Doing good, doing good. Winding down our season here and whatnot. Last weekend, we had the finals for the NMCA, and now we've got the NMRA getting ready to wrap things up and crown champions, right?
Yeah, this weekend at Beach Bend Raceway, we got NMRA World Finals plus the Holly Intergalactic Ford Festival, which we've kind of teamed up on.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot going on there, and that's something we definitely want to get to talking about. But to kind of set the stage for the finals, you know, kind of give our listeners the lowdown on, you know, what's been going on this NMRA year so far.
So it's year 21 for the NMRA. So obviously, you know what we do is of no secret. You know, championship for drag racing, everything from, you know, fast 275 cars and street outlaw to, you know, championship index racing, which we've got a wide variety of index categories that pretty much anybody could fit into if they're, you know, a Ford vehicle and True Street, which is always you know, a huge highlight of our events, you know, 100 plus cars, and just being part of it's always been great.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, what definitely makes the NMRA so cool is, you know, is just the ability for Ford lovers. There is literally a class for everybody within the organization.
Yeah. And that's, you know, over the years, it's just been a fine-tuned process to, you know, to have just, you know, the fast heads up guys who want to go quick and kind of represent the upper end of what, you know, basically a small tire market. We don't do big tire pro mod stuff in NMRA, but, you know, high end, small tire cars to specialty shootouts at some of our bigger events to kind of, you know, if you don't really fit into one of our heads up categories, we've got an opportunity to, you know, whether you have a GT500 or a Terminator, a turbo, we have a turbo only class. So that way, you know, everybody hates turbos and heads up racing, but, you know, you don't have a turbo, but so here it is. I mean, we've got a class just for turbo guys. Just have fun, an opportunity for people to run heads up, run, you know, on excellent prep, which they might not get at their local track, you know, national spotlight, things of that nature. You know, great contingency program is always a good, you know, good part of what we offer, whether it be our championship categories or specialty shootouts.
And then you guys have one new category this year and then one that's kind of a newer category this year. How have those gone?
Great. So we, you know, Limited Street started last year, and that's, you know, great, matured into just a really, you know, as much as you could say that in heads up racing, a, you know, a working man's heads up class. And it's, you know, and it's, I know it's a relative term for a lot of people, but it's matured into an awesome, you know, high 8 second category. You don't need a 25, you know, 25.5, 25.3, 25, whatever cage, SFI cage. And it's been really good, tight, close racing with, you know, with cars and, you know, so many different combinations that are competitive. It makes it a lot easier for people to get involved in a class like that. And then there's Modified Street, which is new for 2019. And that was kind of a playoff of Coyote Modified, opened up to essentially all of the engine platforms that, you know, from Ford, whether it be a 302, a 351, you know, other modular engines, and of course the Coyote. And, you know, modeled it after that. It's a kind of like a lot of guys have called it old Renegade. And I think it's, a great alternative. I know Renegade's really gotten quick when, you know, we've, or like Extreme Street and Ultra Street with our Renegade class. So for someone who, you know, maybe that's a too big of a step with them, or the maintenance program's a lot, they're a little bit smaller power adders, but still very loose rules and basic, you know, basic layout for a car. And it's very traditional, and you don't have to build some, you know, some oddball vehicle. You could still race something that if you want to put a bigger power adder on it and go elsewhere, you can, or just remain with us.
Yeah, so it's definitely a class that gives people a lot of options to come out, maybe have something that isn't necessarily going to fall into some of the upper echelon of heads-up classes, but they can come out and race it with you guys and then race it elsewhere as well.
Yeah, yeah, fast, you know, super fast street car, or, you know, maybe something that fits your local track heads-up program, not some stratosphere budget style application.
So coming into the finals, you know, kind of looking at the event now, you know, what good points battles could people come down to check out, or, you know, what's kind of exciting coming into the finals?
I think on the heads up side, we have just one class wrapped up. Haley James, I believe, in Renegade, her first Renegade championship, is the only one who's wrapped up a title. I know Vinny Palazzolo is all but sealed it up. He still has to show up. I think he still has to qualify in VP Racing Field Street Outlaw to get that, you know, his first national championship. It's a pretty good lock on it. And, you know, he came back. He had that terrible accident after Joliet. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but he had a blowout on the highway, and the trailer turned over, the truck and trailer. And luckily nobody got hurt. But the car, you know, got banged up pretty good, and he worked with a bunch of people to get the car repaired and ready and back on track in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So expect those guys to come down to Bowling Green and run real well, lock down their first championship. Limited Street's wide open. I know, Bill Putnam's made a great charge. Sandra Leslie is within striking distance. Obviously, the defending champion, Mike Zabrowski, has a great shot at it. So it's those three, I think, are kind of leading the way, which is always fun. They're great, great cars, great competitors, they're going to leave nothing on the table. Coyote Stock, gosh, you know, I want to say Claire Stewart's, he's doing really well. He doesn't have it locked up. In fact, let me pull up the points now, and I'll check it out, see where those guys are. It's Coyote Stock is so, so competitive.
Oh yeah, that's one of the coolest classes out there.
Yeah, it's Claire's got a about 290 point lead over Darren, and you know that sounds like a lot, but in that class, I mean, those guys are so tight in qualifying. I mean, you know it. The top 10 cars are like less than a tenth of a second from each other. So, you know, if Claire qualifies poorly in the back and Darren's on top and, you know, someone goes out first round and records, it could make the championship hunt interesting. So we'll see how that shapes up. Dan Rintz has done a great job defending his title in factory stock. I think he's pretty much got a lock on it. You know, we got a couple of new cars coming this weekend. One definitely, you know, new. It's was run under a different owner, but they totally redid the car. Louis Sylvester, he'll be back. He's bringing his pushrod car, which we've seen, but he hasn't run it yet this year. And then he's got a four valve car, which will be fun to see. Nobody's really kind of pushed the four valve combo in quite a few years, and they've been doing a lot of testing. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out with that car. And, Randy Conway and Mike Rupp in Truck and Lightning have a tight battle going. Modular Muscle, that one is, you know, three cars that are within 25 points, 30 points of each other. Donnie Bowles, Susan McLennigan, and Charlie McCullough are all, you know, right there. But Shane Williams is in the hunt. Jason Henson's in the hunt. John Rush is in the hunt. I mean, that's... It's probably the biggest points battle I think Modular Muscle's had in quite a few years in terms of variety of people. And the same with Open Comp, always highly competitive, but I don't think it's as tight as Modular Muscle is. Dennis Korn, who won the championship 2 years ago, He's leading points right now, and there's a you know there's a couple guys. Larry Geddes is in striking distance, and Tom Hoffman, and Gordon Harlow. They're all within striking distance. John Butsko, I think, has Ford Muscle. I mean, he's pretty much the front runner, and same with Marvin. Well, Marvin Knack and Miles Wagner have a tough one in Super Stang. So it's going to be good. I mean, it's what Bowling Green always is. You've got to come in, you've got to race hard, and defend your position. This is it.
And you know that's what makes coming into championship weekend so exciting is when you have some of those points battles that are that tight in some of those classes like Coyote Stock where you never know when someone is just going to absolutely rip one off, and then it could shake up everything. And it just makes the event that much more interesting for the fans and the racers because you can't. You know, the only people that can let their guard down are the ones that have it mathematically locked up. Anything else, you know, it could be a little bit of a dicey go.
Yeah, and, you know, on the heads-up side, it's going to be really hard to overcome some challenges because usually when you come in and you're behind, you know, you kind of look at, you know, record-setting weather as being, a great opportunity to get some extra points, right, on top of your qualifying points and on top of your elimination points. But, you know, we're a little bit warmer this weekend than normal. Sunny weather, it's going to be in the 80s. It's going to be, you know, great for the fans, great for us walking around, really comfortable. But it, you know, maybe a Friday night session when the sun goes down, you know, we'll see possibly record setting potential. But for the most part, I think the records are kind of off the table at this point for the heads up guys, which, you know, makes that climb up on top of, you know, even harder. And, so that'll be interesting. The weather really it for the index guys, it always presents a unique challenge because it's so much cooler in the morning when they typically run, and then it gets warmer throughout the day. So you know, on Sunday morning, you know, they'll come out swinging, have some great weather. Well, then they got to hit their index later in the day when it gets warm, where I think the weather is not going to be as big a variable as it's been in the past for the index guys. So it's definitely going to be a different Bowling Green for the racers across the board in terms of what they've, you know, have battled with in years past, whether it be rain delays and just the unbelievably cold, sessions on Friday night and just huge varying degrees of weather for the index guys. So I think it's going to be a little bit more consistent on that side, which going into this, you know, changes what you do and your game plan for your typical Bowling Green after 21 years.
Oh yeah, and then as far as you know, on the heads up side of things, if you take that record setting weather off the table, then you got to look as a racer. Well, do I want to play ladder games and try to manipulate where I'm going to be on the ladder to be closer to someone, away from someone? So it adds another interesting wrinkle to the whole deal.
Yeah, no, strategy going into this is definitely you definitely have to play it properly. And which makes it fun, right? It, you know, for the people who really follow it very, very closely, it's fun to watch, to see how people react and kind of their approach to, you know, chasing their championship.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one-off races are awesome games of home run derby, but, you know, a series like the NMRA, it is a grind to be able to make it the whole year and do what you got to do to stay on top of things and come close to a points championship, because you never know what, you know, what's going to happen from race to race. And then you come into the finals and it just really kind of can change everything in a heartbeat of one round of racing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's totally, totally the case. So many different weather conditions, so many things year over year change. And, you know, and that's kind of the, you know, kind of the challenge of why people like to chase a national championship is just that diversity. You have to do this, you know, six events, all totally different parts of the country in different parts of the year. And it adds a unique element that for a lot of people is a lot of fun.
And another thing you got to look at too is Bowling Green's got that new surface. So if you have a lot of data on the old surface, you know, how much is that going to change for this new track?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. We've got, you know, Total Venue Concepts comes in to prep it. So hopefully, you know, there's some consistency there. But, you know, Thursday test session will definitely be interesting. And, you know, we'll see who's, who's good at adapting and who is needs a couple more runs.
And what makes the event interesting? You know, I was very fortunate. I got to go 1 year, and it is such, there's so much to look at and check out, and so many cool cars that show up, especially in like your True Street category, where it might be something where you guys don't bring these cars out all the time or often or to every event, but when they come out, it's like just off the hook.
Yeah, and a lot of that, you know, the specialty shootouts in True Street definitely bring out, especially the location. And it's so centrally located, Bowling Green, and that's a unique advantage that you can be from the far Midwest, really far west in the Midwest, and still come from the East Coast and meet there. So we do get an opportunity to see a lot of neat cars that we only see once a year. Like a Larry Thomas's twin turbo, Terminator, which is just a totally, the car is immaculate. It runs awesome. And it's fun to interact with a lot of those guys on top of our regular program for drag racing, and then this year with, Holly coming in, bringing their, their Ford Festival. I mean, that's going to be a huge, totally different dynamic that we've ever had at the finals, because it's always been, a huge car show and drag racing. And now we've got, drifting, some autocross. They're going to be at the NCM Motorsports Park, which is, by the Corvette Museum, to do some autocross stuff. The drift exhibitions with Vaughn Gittin and Chelsea DeNofa. They've got, Bigfoot coming, which is totally awesome. Unfortunately, we can't drive it, which I'm kind of bummed about.
Yeah, that's bum deal.
Yeah. Burnout Contest, they got Cletus McFarlane. And, he's got that crazy four-door Grand Marquis with that VMP-blown mod motor in it. And he's going to be doing, what's become, known as Australian-style burnouts. And it's going to be great. I mean, it's adding a very unique lifestyle element to the event, which, after all these years, it's nice to, to bring in something new for, the fans to interact and reach different markets.
Yeah. And to me, it looks like, I'm guessing the general feels to make it a lot like on the other side of the coin, the LS Fest deal, which is that event is insane with everything that can go on there. And
right.
Bringing that in for the Ford side, I think that's going to be a home run because there's just going to be so much cool stuff to check out. You're not going to know what to look at.
Yeah, no, it's neat. It's this whole thing started last year. Holly was like, well, we want to do something like we do with the LS Fest, but on the Ford side, and obviously, NMRA's got such a huge event and footprint in Bowling Green to begin with. SEMA show is when the discussion had started of like, hey, is this a possibility? And you guys got this great longstanding event. At that time, it was, we celebrated the 20th, running of that event. And obviously, hometown for Holly. And it's like, yeah, I think we can make this work. And then it just started, conversations of, how they do some things at LS Fest, how we do some things. And it's interesting to see how the two different groups, how we view and use the property differently, a different perspective on both of our sides. Like, hey, we've done this, whether it be, spectator gates or layouts or whatever. And so kind of work together, which has been fun to kind of get this whole thing moving and integrate them into what we've built. So it's been a unique experience for sure. And great opportunities, great partner to work with. Tishner and his crew over there are just, they're fantastic. FM3 and Optima. Obviously it's year one. So we think we've got a great plan going into it. Staffed up in a lot of different areas to try and help eliminate, head off some problems, and we'll see where it goes this weekend.
Yeah. That's, unfortunately I won't be able to make, cause I've got some other plans that kind of had to get put into place. I couldn't evade, but I would much rather at least like to come down. If I can't do it this year, I'm definitely going to try to make it down next year. Cause I like anything loud, fast, and dangerous. I got most of my stuff's on the LS side, but there's a lot of really, really cool Ford related stuff that's going to be there that people can check out. And that I think between, you can draw a lot of comparisons between the LS Fest and this Ford Fest crowd. What's going to happen is you're going to get to see a lot of creativity from the community on the builds that you're going to see at the event that are not even drag racing related.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think one of the unique aspects of this compared to the LS Fest is, you know, LS Fest was built after the, you know, an engine platform. Well, now this is built after a brand.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so it's, it, you know, just the truck side of it, the diesel side of it, the, you know, all of the engine platforms for swaps, for that stuff. I mean, there's so many different, you know, directions this thing can go. Obviously, you know, we're going to see where, you know, where things went really well and where we need some improvement for next year. But, I mean, it's just a, it's a great opportunity, I think, for, you know, a Ford fan of a lot of different types. And, you know, obviously, you know, year one, we have, you know, plans on what we expect, our expectations and goals to meet. And, but then we've got, you know, more for next year and the year after that. I mean, it's multi-year plan of what we're going to bring in and change and expectations of, you know, of what different aspects of the event should do.
Now, looking at that, is something that you guys are going to have, you know, look at maybe potentially is you have all these really cool specialty shootouts at events, which is something I want to talk about. Is there something you guys might be able to spring from this Ford Fest to create a specialty shootout just for this event in the future, if it's going to keep going with the Intergalactic Ford Festival?
Well, I mean, on the drag racing side, I think, what we've been doing is going to be really consistent, and we may add some stuff to it here and there, depending on, like I said, some of the direction we see some things going, but for the most part, you know, NMRA drag racing is going to continue as NMRA drag racing. And that's, you know, and that's an important part for us and an important part for Holly, because we do have the history on that side of it. And so, yeah, we're going to have some flexibility to where we may, you know, add certain elements to it, but it's not going to be wholesale changes. You know, what you expect from NMRA drag races, we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, for sure. That's the one thing I did that really stuck out in my mind when I went to the event was those cool, and you do these a lot of different events, the cool specialty NMRA shootouts that you guys have kind of bring in, again, a different element, different cars that might not necessarily fit into other classes. You know, what shootouts are we going to get to see at the NMRA finals this year?
So the one that we've been running for forever at this point, it seems like, is the Mickey Thompson Terminator/Cobra versus GT500 shootout. And it's, you know, the specialty cars that Ford has produced and kind of like a sibling rivalry. And so we've got that this weekend. We've also got the Hellion Turbo Battle, which, again, it's an opportunity for, because turbocharging is so popular in the market, it's an opportunity for a blank sheet, a very open-ended, just, you got a turbo car, come run with us. We you know, here's some basic rules, basic tire limit, and that's it. Just come run, have some fun, have an opportunity to participate in a national event, have an opportunity to, you know, great track prep, very highly organized run events, and if you've got a fast car, well, you got an opportunity to win some money as well.
Yeah, that's
yeah. So and then we also have within True Street, you know, is, you know, 2 years ago we had 152 cars in True Street. We always have consistently 120, 130. We're expecting that number to grow even this year at Bowling Green. And so through True Street, there's also these factions that we've developed. So the Stick Shift Shootout is a huge one. You know, it's a Tremec Stick Shift Shootout, and the fastest stick shift cars in True Street, the top eight, will have a runoff on Sunday. It is a, it's a unique format. You know, Tremec used to wanted it to be heads up for many years, and then they wanted to change the format so that, you know, anybody could really win this thing out of that top eight. So what they do is it's a random draw of who you race, and it's, they use your average as the dial-in, but there's no breakout. So if you ran a 10-0 average and your car goes 980s, that's fine. But it's kind of a unique way to approach it to where kind of anybody can win this shootout, and not just the fastest guy. Then there's also the I Did It Performance King of the Street, which I think is a really awesome format. That comes out of True Street. So we've been running this essentially contest all year for the top eight cars that will be battled out for King of the Street. And it started back in Bradenton. The winner of the True Street event from each NMRA event gets an invitation. The winner of the Spring Break Shootout gets an invitation. And the winner of the St. Louis Gateway Rumble gets an invitation. And so that makes eight cars when you factor in Bowling Green's winner. And if either of those cars have doubled up, like Jeff Bloom, who won True Street and Spring Break Shootout, if he doubles up like he did, well, then we take two people out of the Bowling Green True Street results, the top two that don't already have an invite. And I think we have one guy who is not going. The rest are all locked in. So I think we're going to pull, because we had a double winner in Florida. I think we pull the top three cars out of True Street at this Saturday. And they'll race on Sunday to be part of the King of the Street competition. Invitation only, and the only way you get an invite is by winning one of the races or being one of these alternates at Bowling Green. And I got to tell you, I mean, you know, as people started to realize what the program was, you know, by Maple Grove, there was like, oh man, I got to win this because I really want to participate in King of the Street. And there's also guys coming to Bowling Green like, hey, I know there's three spots. I want to be in on this. And it's a really neat program. I did it's putting up some good money. I think it's a couple grand to win, $2,500 to win, I think. I don't quote me on that, but it's, you know, there's going to be a product giveaway from I Did It also on top of the money. And then there was some other companies are putting up some great prizes. So a guy can walk away with a pretty good chunk of change and be the King of the Street.
Oh, yeah. And there are some legit nasty cars that come out to run in that, which makes it a lot of fun.
Yeah. So one of the rumors is there's that Fairlane that's got that twin turbo Coyote in it.
Yeah, that green one?
Was coming down. Yeah. And I know he's been high sevens. Mike Giovannis, he's thrashing on the car to get that ready. He had some issues. Got that fixed, and I think he's going out testing tomorrow night and then going right to Kentucky. Jeff Bloom's coming down. I mean, it should be really good. I mean, I think there's going to be some great hitters coming out. I think it's going to be fun to watch because, I mean, True Street's always been, you know, not the big budget guys that you see, you know, in the heads-up classes. It's you know, so much of an average guy. People that you look at their car and like, yeah, you know what? I can do this too. And that's what's great. And King of the Street's going to really put those guys on a pedestal. You know, Randy Thomas is also on the list. He's another one who's just, I mean, he's a machine. I mean, the guy runs the same number every time. He'll be a tough one to race. So it'll be good. It's going to be fun. It's going to be very, very unique competition, different than anything we've done in the past.
One of my favorite things to do at either an NMCA or in an NMRA race is to sit in the bleachers and watch True Street when the announcer that's there, either, you know, they might not be 100% familiar with the car or with the cars that run in it, and you see some car go up and absolutely just lay down a ridiculous pass and see their reaction and hear their reaction to some of those cars is just, it's truly priceless.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many, you know, different style streetcar events out there. But True Street is very, very unique. You know, doing the three back-to-back runs, it's such a challenge for some of these faster cars. And you start looking at, you know, transmission fluid and you know water temperature on the engine. And there's so many factors that come into it that it's different than most other streetcar stuff, including Drag Week. And now Drag Week's got its own craziness attached to it and durability, but you know, True Street is definitely a fun, you know, the crews, the people, the cars, the, you know, the wide variety. It's all just, it's such a huge highlight for an NMRA event.
Oh yeah, and you know, like you said, with some of those faster cars, it becomes very interesting to see how well that they can do with that durability, because you know, they're cruising, and then three back-to-back passes on a pretty high strung car, it's not fun or polite or kind to do that car, because they get angry quick.
Yeah, no, I it's you look at some of the logs. I've been fortunate enough to look in a couple of programs, some guys that race with us, and you look at some of the data logs on it, and it's like, whew, brutal. Even manufacturers are like, oh gosh. But it's, some of the faster cars have had, unique fixes for the problems that arise, and it's sometimes it's not the the most well engineered, but it's highly effective and it works. Much of this may have some manufacturers, but it's great because it gives the people who use the parts a unique way to look at it and say, oh yeah, you know what, I've got a similar problem. Maybe it's a round robin, bracket car. Well, these guys, they've really, it survives there, it's going to survive in this. So like that trickle down technology, from other aspects of drag racing to even, True Street guys, what they're doing lends itself nicely to, the other, other niches within the market. It's fun.
Oh, and I've been at PRI when I've seen racers explain to a manufacturer how they're using their product, and they will pull out a pen and paper and say, "Can you explain how you did that again? Because it's not supposed to live like that. I want to figure out how to replicate it or improve it."
Yeah, it's one of the neat stuff is Mazir. I mean, obviously, everybody knows them for their water pumps and stuff, but they built a pan. The Mazir family, they're huge bracket racers. I think they might have a top sportsman car also, but definitely, dragsters and super comp and a lot of that, where round robin becomes, part of their routine on a Sunday in eliminations. And so they developed a transmission pan that kind of runs fluid through, like, a trans cooler, but still can circulate it through the pan as well. Not just go out and come back in. It's fins within the pan and channels. And I remember, going to PRI show with Chavanis and seeing that, and it's like, hey, can this be used on a True Street car? And Don's like, yeah, totally. Like, we never even thought of that, but this is why we built it. And so Mike the next season got one, and we ended up following it in the magazine, and it worked and worked flawlessly. Because Mike's, he wasn't at a critical moment with trans fluid temperature, but he was getting to that point. And the Mazir pan with its, with the channels in it to help circulate and cool the pan down. It worked wonders, and it's so it was fun to be involved and see the effects that these guys can have on the market.
Oh yeah, and in the end, racers are, a company can do as much R&D as they want and they'll put out a great product, and then racers will find the most interesting and amazing ways to break it or use it in a way it's not designed to be used.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think that's that's it's a testament to what we do and as a whole throughout the whole thing, whether it be better tires, whether it be better, engine parts, or in this case, transmission pans, something as simple as a transmission pan. And I think that's the bigger effect on the market's always, it's always fun to see.
Now, but during our pre-call, you mentioned, that the NMR is kind of working on some of the schedule for next year. It's not fully released yet because there's still some T's that need to be crossed and I's that need to be dotted. But there is a big event that's already locked in, correct?
Yeah, so we've already announced a spring break shootout for 2020 at Bradenton Motorsports Park. It's going to be February 27th through March 1st. And that's locked, loaded. We've already got, our Facebook event set up for it. People, I think, there was 700 or 800 people have already signed up for that. And working with Victor and those guys at that track on some unique elements that we're going to add back into that program. I think it'll be fun. I think we're going to be starting announcing stuff here in the next couple of weeks. We'll have our full schedule shortly, but NMCA schedule is released. So check out the NMCA website or Facebook page, and you'll get those dates. And just by process of elimination, you'll know when the NMRA Atlanta and Joliet race is going to be as well, because they're the combined races. So essentially, we have three out of the six dates out there publicly, for NMRA. So you know, we're already, I mean, 2020 planning started, you know, 2 months ago. Serious planning. Obviously, there's always, you know, different things that are already in place for next year. But I think 2020, especially on the NMRA side, it's going to be fun. We're doing some uniquely different parts of the events differently. I think we're definitely approaching how we look at things in a unique manner. So I think people are going to like it. I think it's going to be a fun twist. Nothing, the same organizational standpoint, the same, you know, championship drag racing, you know, what NMRA is not changing. It's just our approach to different parts of it are going to change. And I think people will enjoy it. You know, Bradenton, and we've got some really neat special projects, I think is probably the proper way to say it, that we're working on that. I think it's going to be fun.
See, now that's awesome that you guys continue to find ways to reinvent, I guess is not necessarily the best word, but reimagine the way that you approach this stuff. And it's very fan and racer driven, which is what kind of, I think, brings that cycle of wanting people to come back more, because they know they're going to get treated right. And they know that things are going to get tweaked as needed. And there's going to be new and cool stuff to kind of do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as you know, a company, I mean, you always have to evolve and stay true to your customers, but also create new elements to want to attract new customers and growth. And, you know, outside of NHRA, you know, I mean, I think we are the longest running heads up program, you know, and if you want to look at, you know, NHRA is kind of like where we're at, pro stock or nitro. I mean, those are pro ranks. Those are different, but different animals. But in terms of, nobody's been doing this longer than we have in terms of this type of racing. And so, you know, on one hand, it's a great feather in our cap. And the other, it's like, you've got to always maintain and stay on top of things, because we're writing the book on how this thing goes, because nobody's done it this long. So you can't look at the other guy and say, well, how do they do it improperly or the right way? So, so it's definitely fun to keep it interesting and reimagine certain elements of the events, but still maintain, you know, strong customer service, you know, highly organized events, and you know, a good family atmosphere. And that's, you know, those are big cornerstones for, you know, what we've built.
And kind of going off of that, you know, the drag racing world is extremely dynamic across the board at every level, you know, whether it's guys in bracket dragsters breaking chassis and trying to make it to the next round that happened this past week, and that was kind of wild. And then you had, you know, kind of what was going down at the Shakedown this weekend, you know, with Marcus laying down that ridiculous 357 pass. You know, what do you think is going to, with that coming late in this year, what do you think is going to be coming into the heads up world kind of going into next year?
You know, just more of the same. I mean, you know, we all act surprised when, you know, people start pushing the barrier, you know, like when, you know, I remember there was a memory on social media not too long ago about, you know, 420s in drag racing. And, you know, now someone goes 420s on a 315 with a twin turbo big block, you're like, yeah, whatever. Like, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think it's just more of the same. You know, I think it's, you look at the quality of teams, the quality of the parts that are built, and the accessibility of a lot of it. And I think it's just more of the same. Just people, you know, the gains, I don't think, are going to be as huge until you change the technology behind it. So, you know, I don't know what technology can bring. I mean, I think we're so far along compared to we have been. It's kind of like a cell phone, right? Like, how many more cell phones can Apple and Samsung produce with this many more features? You know, is that really going to change how we use cell phones? So I think you have like this, you know, it's like with any technology, you get to a point to where the gains aren't as substantial. And I think that's kind of where we're at. You know, these guys are, you know, 357 from a nitrous car, you know, I think last year you'd been like, holy cow. But, you know, they've had some really good changes over there with how they approach, you know, running a nitrous car. So it's of no surprise. It's that technology jump. But we'll see. You know, we'll see where it goes. there's still great, great enthusiasm and engagement from the racers, people still building cars. So that's, that's the sign of health.
It's very interesting to see this like infinite loop of technology and knowledge kind of chasing each other and how they interact with each other. Kind of what you're saying that, the technology came along, people got the knowledge, figured out how to make it go faster, and now they're getting to the very bleeding edge of what that technology can do. It's going to be interesting to see what new technology is brought in to kind of, bring the cycle back up to the 12 o'clock hour.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost it's almost like you see it with any new segment, right? You push the parts till they break, then you figure out how they don't break, and then once you figure out how they don't break, you figure out how to make them better, and then when you figure out how to make it better, it just kind of gets to where we are now, to where you're inching along, not going from, like what was, Dwayne Mills, I think, had set the record at 4-0, I want to say it was only like 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was only 3 or 4 years ago.
Right. So you kind of look at it and say, my gosh, well, you've had, better turbochargers. You've had, an amazing change in transmission technology. Then you've had, engine management systems that are, just incredible of what you can do and processing speeds and capabilities that they're giving users. So we've had this big jump, and now we'll see where it goes next.
It's interesting kind of when you see all the flap on social media and people promoting this, that, and the other. And to me, the benchmark that stands is Frankie Taylor's 348. That shows the edge on what you can do with a door car in the eighth mile. The question is, that was done on big tires. Can someone do something comparable on small tires?
I think there's so many variables. I think because it's class racing, there are rules, right?
Yeah.
I know some people have brought up, well, on the pro mod side, a pro nitrous car is heavier than a radio versus world car in terms of nitrous. Does that change? Well, okay, so what would a pro nitrous guy do if he got to remove the same amount of weight, or the other way around? So, it's what you put the time in, right? And I think, Stevie and Marcus, they're extremely good at what they do. And it's what you put the time in, just like, Tommy Franklin went 362. But look how long it took, him under pro nitrous rules to go from, 364 was over a year ago. Here we are, battling now for 200s. It gets back to that technological stuff. And then comparing the two tires, it's also, what did Frankie weigh? What would Frankie do now? Right. He doesn't run that car in that trim. Would he be faster? The transmission technology, as we know, is significantly better. Fuel injection on a blown car, is commonplace where, I don't tune those cars, but just in my thought process, I think it's better. I'm obviously no expert, but there's all those variables of 348 is the fastest run, but what would he do today? What was the weight of that? Was he, that was, I think, at a time of the ADRL where they didn't have minimum weights, if I remember right.
No, it was just show up and have right. Just enough safety to be safe.
Right. You had just the SFI requirements, and that was it. So, so trying to compare two different classes, I think, is really a challenge. The all-time door slammer record is 348 in the eighth mile. Can we go faster? I would think so. But what? If Stevie took, all the weight out of Shadow 2.0 and put the screw on it with a big tire, what would that do?
I'd love to see that. Be very interesting.
Right. Right. And, I think it's hard to compare, we're looking at just a tire, right? But the big picture beyond the tire is so much more than that. And I think that's, it's a hard comparison to do it accurately. If you want to say what's faster, same day, same rules, you know, that's always a fun comparison. But at the end of the day, it's just fun chit chat because, you know, you've got guys who are dedicated to radio versus the world and, you know, chasing after the Ducks races and all that money. And then you got guys who, you know, who pro mods their thing, you know, and they chase, you know, championships or whatever they do in pro mod.
And
so, I mean, like I said, at the end of the day, you know, is one tire better than the other? You know, I don't know, man.
It,
you know,
it depends.
It's amazing that we're having this conversation, you know?
Yeah. I'm not
just 10 years ago, you know, not even 5 years ago, you would never thought twice about it. That a radio would be, you know, in the conversation for battling it out for the all-time quickest door slammer, which they're still a 10th away. You know, the fastest radial pass of all time is still a 10 slower, you know, but again, I mean, you know, shadow, no rules, no weight. You know, if he can get the car to the same weight as Frankie, you know, on a radio, I would think so. I mean, at some point you look at it and you say it's power. Okay, well, they got the same power, right? I would think the technology today on the drivetrain, on the transmission stuff is better. Then you look at, well, the 60-foot, you know, the radial 60 is just as hard as the big tire. So you start throwing that all that out there, it theoretically it should be faster. You know, it's 60-foot, 330 and 8th mile. I mean, those are the three time increments we measure. He's running with them to the 330. I mean, to the 60, then to the 330. I mean, there's, you know, mechanically they should be the same. I mean, you know, if you know, but we have better technology today than we did. I don't know when Frankie set that. I don't know, what year was that?
God, was it
12, 11?
Yeah, I was gonna say it was at least that long ago. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Right. So I would think power wise, if we've got more power. Well, if you get 60, as good as he does. And then you got more power. Well, theoretically, it should run faster.
And kind of going off of that as well, you know, crazy conversations, odd comparisons. Then you had the dust up for a while where it was, you know, a nitro car versus a radial tire car, which that opens up another.
So we're laughing, but when, you know, Brian Loans had done the, had did put up or shut up on Motor Trend TV. And I was like, Brian, you're the only person who could pull this off. And at the time, what a funny car ran to the 1,000-foot is what the radio cars are running to the 660. And I said, man, that would be like you couldn't do it as a race because it would be too hard for the fan and the timing system. But the way they run their, you know, the put up or shut up TV show when it was on the air, you could totally. I mean, it was perfectly made for TV, and obviously, you know, they canceled the show before that could happen. I don't know if, you know, if they would have ever done it, but that would have been a total blast to watch, you know, funny car run to the 1,000-foot and the radio run to the 660. But yeah.
I mean, we've already seen a funny car race an off-road truck. So, you know,
yeah, but this wouldn't be a publicity stunt. This would just be pure fun. And the element of TV could create the viewership, the, you know, like the way to watch it very effectively, you know, multiple cameras and declaring the winner. It would be fun for the viewer, rather than an off-road truck against a funny car.
Nightmare for, you know, if it were to happen, it would be interesting just because you would have to have two lanes that are so vastly prepped differently. It's unreal.
I mean, Tyler proved it this weekend. I mean, not that it was difficult. I mean, you have two different lanes, you have two different techniques. I mean, you know, it that can be done very easily. I mean, that's the easy part of it. You know, the other side of it is just the safety factor, right? So you'd have to have, so whatever is required for nitro, you would have to have the other driver technically be up to spec on that too, because God forbid, you know, the funny car hit into the, or one car hit the other car, well, you'd have a nitro fire. And you'd have to, you know, be have the proper safety gear for both.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think of that end of it for sure.
Yeah,
but just the race side of it, to see, you know, if both cars were able to pull off a decent run, that would be an absolute wild side by side affair to actually see how it would happen and if they can make it happen. Just from the sheer visual of it, would it be absolutely awe inspiring and amazing?
Well, I mean, you know, you've been around the nitro stuff. I mean, it's, you know, those cars in person are just so,
such
a visceral experience. I mean, it's, you know, they're just incredible, you know, incredible machines. But, you know, you'd like I said, if you did the 1,000 foot versus 660, I mean, you could only pull it off using, you know, a pre-taped and, you know, properly edited, you know, showdown. So yeah, I mean, it, you know, on TV, you know, Nitro on TV does nothing compared to in person. But yeah, it would be a fun comparison. It would be, you know, it'd be like the ProMod versus Radio with, you know, with the same rules, so to speak. Just it would be a great fun deal, but you need someone who's, you know, willing to foot the bill for it.
Yeah, that ain't gonna be cheap. And to me, it almost throws back to like back in the days in the wild, wild world of sports when Evel Knievel was gonna jump 13 buses and a bunch of cars and God knows what else. It's it's a spectacle where people are like, I don't know what's gonna happen, but something's gonna happen, and I want to be there to see it.
Yeah,
or I want to see the after effect, and you know, just what happens.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you know, I'd love to just even harken back to the days of, you know, a lot of match racing. And you know, I guess, who was it? Someone was telling me just recently when I was on Drag Week that they were talking to Big Chief, Justin Shearer. And I guess he's been doing a lot of match races at, you know, just a lot of local events, just having fun, connecting with fans and doing match races. And I'd love to see more of that. I think for a lot of local tracks, I think it would be, you know, it'd be a great attraction.
Oh, I was at the No Preps King race this past weekend at Norwalk, and that is the second most packed I've ever seen that place outside of the Night of Fire. It was nuts.
Yeah. I think, you know, Night of Fires are, you know, a lot of tracks run some great, you know, Night of Fire programs, which, you know, are really great revenue for the local track. But also, you know, they should do some match racing, you know, Wednesday night. You know, I remember Englishtown, they used to have, you know, great match races, Wednesday night stuff. You know, they had these, you know, similar to like a Night of Fire, but on Wednesday nights, but they'd bring in, you know, some great pro mods that were good rivalries at the time. And, you know, at one point they talked about, which was really neat, when Outlaw 10.5 still ran quarter mile, it ran similar times to Pro Stock, and they were talking about bringing, you know, Greg Anderson or Jason Lyon up to race Tim Lynch. And, you know, that never happened, but it was like just the prospect of it. Like, man, that would have been awesome to see.
Oh, that would have been a hell of a race to see. Yeah.
Just at that time, just so different looking cars.
Oh, and yeah, wow.
It would have been fun. And they never did, you know, obviously get that together. But yeah, I mean, unique match races like that, I think, you know, is definitely, you know, I'd love to see more of that in the sport.
And I think that, too, would also help, you know, bring more people in because, you know, you got your typical Saturday night kind of program. You know, you might have a healthy bracket racing deal, but there's no fans in the stands. Bring in a couple, like a quick eight shootout, you know, some match races, something like that, that's going to draw people in that's not necessarily being live streamed or anything like that, just so people have to come in and see it. And that's how you hook more of those fans in to get them to come back or, you know, want a bracket race or do a true street deal. You know, it kind of brings all that in.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, you know, Bill Bader did a great job with that with the Cavalcade Stars a bunch of years ago. And, you know, they kind of changed the program up from there. But, I mean, Cavalcade Stars was just his divisional race for NHRA.
It's still a great show.
Right. It's still a great show. But, you know, if you remember a bunch of years ago, he had brought in, you know, a bunch of, you know, faster cars and some exhibition vehicles. And he did a great job of packing the place. You know, it probably holds a record for, like, the largest attended, you know, divisional race, you know, in NHRA history. I mean, it was mobbed. I mean, they did a great job, and you know, he put a lot of money into that with the match races and stuff. But it just kind of goes to your point of, you know, there's a great bracket race. You know, maybe throw some other elements in there to attract some different, you know, different fan base.
And that's what made the for me, being the first time going to the Night of Fire this year, that's what it made it interesting, was like, that's part of that whole weekend of racing. And up until showtime, they were running bracket cars, and they had their pro mod deal, some qualifying there, and then they did the jet car deal. And it was interesting. You had your hardcore people that were there to watch the bracket race, and they were going to be there all day no matter what. And just as the day went on, more and more people just kept showing up and being exposed to that. It was kind of awesome to see.
Well, I mean, we're talking about Bader. I mean, the guy knows how to do things, and you know, very successful track operator, amazing facility. But you know, the Night of Fire, and I don't think people realize. I mean, they used to broadcast it. It used to be a TV show. that they had at one point.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
that's how big this thing has been. I mean, it's, you know, it's, you know, I don't know how many years he's been doing it, but I would have to imagine it's 30 or 40 years at this point.
40 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're, you know, they understand the show and, but also this other element of, you know, taking your local guys and putting them into, you know, a darn near national event level, actually probably is as big as his national event, and putting them in front of that crowd too. Right. So, you know, a super comp racer, you know, who runs on a Sunday morning or Saturday morning in an NHRA race. Well, now he's running, you know, at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock when the crowd's starting to get there at Night of Fire and doing a great job for his, you know, his weekly racers and putting them in a great position to race in front of an awesome crowd and be a part of a very unique and special evening.
And to kind of tie that back into, you know, with the NMRA, to put a bow on the program, I think that's with what the programs, what the NMRA offers at all events is what makes it awesome. Because, again, it's something where you either can fit in the True Street, Open Comp, any of that, and you get that experience and that feel of racing at a big event. And it's different than, you know, you're a Saturday night or a Friday night deal. You're, you know, it's got a loose feel to it. But you come to these big events, and it just, when you're racing in them, it's just, it's fun. It's got a really awesome feel to it.
Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, what, you know, we work hard to maintain and, you know, not push the little guy out, keep them involved. You know, the awards ceremony is just as much about, you know, the Open Comp top 10 guys as much as it is a Pro Mod or Street Outlaw. And, you know, they're as much as the program as anybody else. You know, every racer to compete at our events pays the same price going in, because that's how we view everybody. They're all equal. They're all our customer. And we work hard. I mean, Raleigh and his guys and Steve Wolcott, I mean, it comes from all of us that, you know, like, this is how we do things, and everyone's important.
Well, Mike, appreciate you coming on the show once again to talk NMRA and talk drag racing in general. And, you know, as always, I like to give my guests their last little bit to do their plugs and their shout-outs and tell people where they can see what's going on. So the floor is yours, my friend. Tell people where that what's going on and where they can see at and what's coming up.
Beach Bend Raceway this weekend for the NMRA World Finals and Holly Ford Festival. It's going to be a very unique event, unlike any other Ford event ever produced. It will be the largest Ford event of the, what I would call the modern times. And, you know, obviously, you know, World Four Challenge is big and that, but I think this is the start of something unique, fresh, for the market. And I think it's going to be an absolute monster. Certainly not one to miss. So come on down. There's a little bit of everything for everyone. Kids are free and free parking. So that's this weekend, you know, and then we got 2020, keep an eye out. We got a lot of big announcements coming over the next several weeks. And I think it's going to be fun. We're going to have a great time next year and build on what we've had for the last 21 years.
Well, there you have it, folks. Make the trek to Beach Bend this week. And it's very often you don't, it's not very often you get to be a part of history. So come down there and you can get the shirt and say, look, I was there when it first happened. And, you know, you can be a part of the deal. But, you know, thanks again, Mike, for coming on the show. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Mike for coming on and talking racing with us again. And as always, may reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Until next week, folks.